listeners, thank you for tuning in to the Chats That Matter podcast, the only podcast exclusively for employees of Cincinnati Bell, Inc. That's CBTS, Onyx, Hawaiian Telcom, and of course, Cincinnati Bell. In today's episode, we want to take some time to recognize a very important month here at the company, National Disability Employment Awareness Month. We're dropping in today on a conversation between Cincinnati Bell, Inc. CEO Lee Fox and CBI CFO Andy Kaiser as they discuss ending the stigma of discussing disabilities in the workplace. So without further ado, let's settle in and take a listen.
Great topic today. One of the things we wanted to start to discuss was why do we think the subject of disabilities is such a taboo subject in corporate America? Why don't we talk about it more? And why isn't it more of an open conversation? And you and I both know this. We've been in these positions for years. And you know what it comes down to is really liability, right? It's measuring liability and safeguarding against liability. And with everything out in the world today, healthcare wise, there are certain regulations that were set up to protect people. Right. And I'm no expert. I'm no lawyer. But those like HIPAA exists for a reason, exists to help people and protect people. But at times, you know, they can be limiting. And you and I have run into these limitations several times in our careers where something that we feel like makes perfect sense to be transparent about, talk about, be out in the open. You just can't be because the lawyers get involved and they try to, they're doing their job, but they end up honestly scaring you from saying anything, right? And so let's talk about that a little bit. I'd love your opinion and some examples of what you've seen, but I think it starts there, right? That for a corporation, usually we're so scared about doing something wrong, and we have such strong governance in place to prevent us from doing something wrong that. It can be a limiting factor when it comes to conversations like this.
I agree completely. And the reality is what that creates is an environment of fear. People are afraid to discuss either physical or mental limitations, disabilities, because this environment is such that folks are basically coached on don't talk about it. It's very real from a liability perspective. And so I think then what individuals do is hold that to themselves because they're afraid, hey, if I disclose this, bad things could happen on the other side of that discussion. People are afraid if you disclose it to me, bad things could happen to the organization. So I think that has historically been the situation where it was just not talked about for fear of what talking about it meant.
And I think part of what we need to help people understand is there's a reason why that's in place, right? Those protections are there for a reason, and we need to respect those protections. But at the same time, it shouldn't limit the fact that if someone wants to discuss something, they want to seek help for something, that we can't have open dialogue and be empathetic and understanding. But to your point, there is that fear. So, how do we get past that? Look, as two of the leaders of the organization, and I think you and I are of a very similar mind, how do we pass that? How do we encourage people to open up at the same time, keeping those protections in place for the individuals and the company?
So it's not as simple for a lot of reasons, and I won't go into the complexities. There's just too much to talk about, but I will say it is similar to the discussion around pride, where you have folks that are fearful that if they, as we always say, bring their whole selves to work, that there could be retaliation, that ultimately there could be an adverse consequence to letting certain individuals know about their sexual orientation, which is flat out wrong. We know that. We've talked about it. We've said we will tolerate none of that in our organization. So I think the same holds true here, which is individuals should understand that there will never be a situation where we will permit, tolerate retaliation due to a physical or mental limitation or handicap. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay to deal with these things in the workplace when they arise. And you shouldn't be afraid that that means that potentially your job is at risk. We have to have a workplace where individuals are allowed to let others know what they're dealing with. And that doesn't mean on the other side, and absolutely shouldn't be on the other side, somebody dispensing therapy advice or medical advice, because they are not in the position to do that. But to be a compassionate listener and understand that someone is dealing with stuff that you just never could have understood or expected that that individual was dealing with, I think we have to be understanding and allow folks to have that dialogue.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, I think this is such a deep subject, because then you start to talk about, you know, why the fear exists. And, you know, let's be candid, the fear exists from the corporation standpoint, that if somebody comes out and says, you know, hey, I suffer from depression, right? And they tell the manager that, and then 2 months later, they're let go for any reason. The fear is that they're going to come back and say, wait a minute, I just told you I suffer from depression. I was let go because of that. And there's a lawsuit. So to me, what this starts with is everything that we're doing from the standpoint of helping managers manage, right, and have honest dialogue about performance with employees. All the things we're doing with Christie's group for training and putting in, you know, measures in place and a cadence with employees to talk to employees. That's where this becomes so important, because if you're not having those conversations, that's where these surprises happen, right? I've always said, look, if I have a hard conversation with somebody, I have failed as a manager if they're surprised, right? And so that's one thing that we have to continue to deal with. I don't think we're there yet as a company, but that's why this becomes so important, because if we can get that baseline and foundation set, to me, you can start having these other conversations with less fear. Because I, on the flip side of that, I understand if you're an employee, right? And, you know, I've come out and said, hey, I, you know, X, Y, and Z about myself and I need help. And then suddenly I'm surprised, you know, look, I get angry. I think it's because of that. And something happens, right? And so there are so many layers to this subject that we need to deal with. And I think we're dealing with them and trying to work on them. But to your point, one thing that we can't do is we can't just close down. I mean, it's so important. You know, you read the news, you know, immediately, just because he was an absolute hero of mine from the standpoint of an entertainer, was Robin Williams. You know, you look at what happened with Robin Williams. He suffered from depression, ended up taking his own life. I mean, I talked to my kids about it. My kids were incredibly upset about that. We loved Robin Williams, right? And, you know, you see this happening all over the place, that, you know, whether it's postpartum depression of some sort, you know, these are real, real issues. And we as a society need to help. This cannot have the stigma. And the reason it's so important, right, is it's costing people's lives. It's an isolation. You know, what are your thoughts around the importance of, you know, why is it important as a corporation that we open all this up, right, and make this more transparent?
Well, you touched on it by mentioning isolation. I'm clearly not a mental health expert, but what you hear regularly is individuals feel completely alone. They feel like they can't talk about it because it is taboo. And gosh, if you have depression, something must be wrong with you. And it's not a normal ailment. Just basically you hear, just get over it. Just don't be depressed, right? Focus on the positive. And it's not that simple. So to have an individual feel that they have others that they can talk with about this, and it's okay. Just like, you know, I often use the example, and, you know, Lee, you know this, I've had many surgeries. When I hit 45, all hell broke loose and just started getting surgery after surgery. And I had spinal surgery and rotator cuff surgery. And, you know, people have no issues asking me, how are you doing, Andy? Because they see the big giant rotator cuff sling on, and you kind of can identify what that is. And nobody hesitates to ask, what's going on? What is that? And then I tell them, how'd you do it? What's your therapy? But if, you know, if somebody said, boy, I'm just kind of depressed right now, everybody clams up. Nobody wants to talk about it. And that's a problem. Why can't we talk about other issues that we're dealing with physically and mentally, the way that we talk about injuries, And, you know, if somebody's battling cancer, everybody rallies behind that person, as they should, and talks about what can I do? Let's get support groups in. Somebody's dealing with a mental health issue or even a physical health issue that is less discussed. And now nobody wants to talk about it. And then to your point, you feel isolated and it just perpetuates that loneliness. And if it's depression. And I think the only way we make that better is make it okay to talk about. And, you know, I'll just share a quick story. I've shared this with you, Lee, but for the broader group, this was the first time. I'm 52 years old, and this was the first time, which is hard to believe, given how many people are affected by depression. This was the first time this ever happened to me. I was getting my hair cut about a month or two ago, and the girl that was cut my hair was a delight. She was very good at what she did, despite if you look at my hair and you don't think that's the case, she is good at what she does.
I just figure she's a master of using products.
And so she's working through my you know, post-COVID 6 months of no haircut. And she just said, I love doing what I do. It helps me so much with my depression. And it almost caught me off guard because she was so out there and open. And then we talked about it. And I wasn't trying to solve her problems. And I wasn't telling her who to talk to or what medicines exist or what therapy she should go get. I just listened. And she talked about how much cutting hair and giving that type of happiness to her customers, how much that helped her deal with depression. And I thought, wow, we are making strides. We got a long way to go. But this girl, who it's the first time I had ever met her, first time she ever cut my hair, openly was talking about depression the way that people openly talk about other issues that historically have been okay to talk about. Depression is not one of them. So I couldn't agree with you more, Lee. It starts with, let's make certain that folks don't feel isolated and that they don't feel that they can't talk about it, because I think that is critically important.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a time like this where, you know, we're in just a heightened state to begin with the pandemic, with people being isolated in general, this becomes even more important. You know, somebody made a comment to me a few weeks ago, asked how I was doing, right? And made the perfect comment. I hadn't thought about this, but they said, you know, you have a lonely job that just became isolated. And I thought about it. And I said, you know, that's a great point. And I don't think people realize how much, like, I end up talking to you and I have talked to some other people that are close to me, you know, on a fairly regular basis, honestly, just to, you know, talk sometimes. I mean, I know you and I get on the phone at times just to talk for an hour, right? And you know, a lot of it's work. But it's not all work.
It's often therapeutic.
Yeah, exactly right. And so, you know, I think every single one of us needs an outlet, and it becomes so much more important in this environment that we're in. And I don't think this environment is getting better anytime soon. And candidly, I'm very scared about the winter that's coming up, right? I think we haven't been through the depth of a winter during this pandemic. And I'm fearful of what that means when people can't, you know, leave their home because of the environments they're in. And you mentioned the importance of the ERGs. And I think I couldn't agree more, by the way. We learn and are learning so much from ERGs and our employees through these groups. One of the things that the BEED ERG suggested was what turned into, you know, the Take a Minute Day, which was, you know, a quarterly day of just mental health. I need a mental break. You know, what I love about that is, and we all run into this, PTO is something so different, right? We all plan our PTO. We're very conscious about what we do for PTO. I know every once in a while I'll randomly take a Friday PTO if my schedule's low, but that's different. You know, you almost bank PTO as something and you try to plan for it. And what I liked about these are just unplanned. Like, look, hey, I need a break. I'm just going to step away. And I was so happy about, you know, that idea and how that originated from the ERG. You know, there are so many things that we can do. And I know, you know, you personally, you've been affected by it. And I've been affected by it. Three of my kids suffer from ADHD. And, you know, I remember, and you and I talked about this a long time ago, when my kids were, you know, kind of coming of age, a big conversation with my wife and I was, you know, do you medicate them for this, right? And honestly, I was against it. And this is the stigma, right? This is that kind of inherent societal thing that puts pressure on us. You know, I thought, look, if I medicate my kids, am I failing as a father? You know, all these things kind of go through your head. And honestly, thank God, I have a wife who has a background in this and is just infinitely smarter than I am on this stuff. And she convinced me, look, we have to do this. It's going to help them, you know, with school. And I'll tell you, it was night and day. I mean, we struggled with the decision with our first son, but from there on, there was no question. And now it's become a regular part of, I mean, we even joke at nights, like my 10-year-old now, like we know when the medication's out of his system. It's like, you know, the Tasmanian devil spinning top has entered the room. And, you know, it's like, oh, medication's out of his system. Good luck getting homework done, kind of thing. But these are real, real issues, right? And there are so many different types of these issues that I think families have to deal with. And, you know, that's one that, you know, my family deals with. But that was an example in hindsight of me kind of falling into that stigma, that societal stigma. And like I said, thank God I had a wife that pushed me into doing the correct thing. So has this affected you in any way?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, to kind of tie in other ERGs and profound moments where until you experience something, you just don't understand it. And that's kind of what we're dealing with across. It's why ERGs are so important. But, you know, starting with pride, I grew up in Beaver Creek. And as far as I knew, I didn't know anybody that was gay. And I didn't even really know what that meant. And then I had this experience where all of a sudden I realized, wow, there are people dealing with this and they're dealing with discrimination and it's horrible. And then all of a sudden the light goes on and you realize how difficult that struggle must be. So then you move on to the bold group and being a white male in America, things are easy as a white male. And you don't feel those moments of oppression and judgment and ugliness and racism, because you're not living it every day. And then all of a sudden through life and through experience, you realize, oh my God, this is very real. And it is 100% intolerable and something needs to be done. So the same with mental health. If I go back to when I was a young man, I didn't understand that there were people dealing with. And in this case, I'm talking specifically about mental health. There's obviously also physical disabilities, but on the ADHD front, you know, when I would hear about mental issues, they just didn't seem real. I didn't know anybody, or at least I didn't think I knew anybody that was dealing with mental health issues. And then all of a sudden I have five children. And to show you how real the reluctance to talk about it is, I would openly tell you which child has OCD. So I have a child that's been dealing with OCD for 4 years, and it is brutal to watch what your child goes through with the realities of OCD. And there's a lot of different forms of OCD. So for 4 years, we as a family have worked to try to help my child work their way through what OCD is all about. And it affects the family. It profoundly affects, of course, the child that's dealing with it. And all of a sudden, something that seemed, you know, maybe not real is very real for us as a family. And there's just a reluctance to talk about what they're dealing with. So my child has said, I really don't want to talk about it. Like I said, I would openly talk about it. I think it needs to be openly talked about. But my child has said, please, you know, please don't share my name, my story, because it's very personal to them. And I think that demonstrates how taboo this can be. And we need to get past that, and we need it to be okay. So they are dealing with the reality of still today, people don't want to hear about this. People don't want to talk about it because in many cases it's weird. It's bizarre. It shouldn't be happening. You should be able to get it under control. And it's just not that simple. And when we don't talk about it as a society, and it doesn't become something that is at the front of what we need to tackle and understand, it continues to remain in the background. I think we're getting a lot better about the dialogue. There's a whole lot of movement underway. You know, when you point to celebrities and you can get annoyed with celebrities, but when you have a Prince Harry out there that everybody looks up to, who says, I have dealt with depression ever since my mother passed away, right? And you have Oprah Winfrey standing side by side with him talking about her issues. And you have Dak Prescott, who, this is hard to believe, but Dak Prescott, the leader of Dallas Cowboys, one of the best quarterbacks playing the game today, just the other day, his brother killed himself. And there were people, analysts, saying, oh, he's showing weakness by talking about how sad he's been, and he's been dealing with depression as a result of the suicide of his brother. And then everybody poured support on top and said, the analysts that said that need to be removed from their jobs. It's fantastic that you as a leader are coming out and talking about this openly, because that's what needs to happen. So as a family, we've dealt with it. It's very real. We've been in support groups where you see adults bawling hysterically, talking about their OCD or their children's OCD. And a big part of what they're dealing with is society doesn't want to talk about it, and society doesn't want to hear about it. So it's critically important that we keep talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I would add one other element to that, because I've been through, very similar things with siblings. And you know my background, father left when we were really young. And, we all deal with that in different ways. And I would say that when you have somebody close to you dealing with something like that, the other element is, a lot of times you don't know how to react, mm-hmm. right? And because it's not discussed, because, there is a stigma, the people close to you don't know how to react to it. And I remember, as I was young, I didn't know how to react to it. And so it was, hush, hush.
Right? Absolutely.
And I think, that's also, I think, one of the benefits of getting the subject matter just open and into, the forefront, is just, it's not only to help directly help the people that are suffering, but it's the people that care for them right next to them, give them resources and the ability to help the people that they care about. Right. Because I think that's missing also.
And I think that, to talk about, we've kind of talked about, it's taboo and people are afraid, but I also think, look, we're kind of hardwired to, we see a problem and we want to fix it. And you just touched on the exact challenge that we have with our child. You see somebody that has a broken leg, hey, I'm going to hold the door for you. I'm going to carry your computer bag. There's things I can do to help you, but we want to quickly help. We'll bring food to your house because you can't cook, because you're bedridden, or whatever the case may be. We want to help, but we don't know what to do. And so really, it's about compassionate listening. It's just, if they just need an outlet to talk with you, you're probably not going to be able to fix what they're dealing with, and that's not your job. So with my own child, my wife and I talk regularly about, we can't fix this. Only they can fix it. We feel helpless, so then we just don't really address, because we don't know what we can do. And really, what you can do is be a compassionate ear. And just let them talk.
Or honestly, I think the fallacy is to think that it can be fixed. And many times it's just treated, right? And I think as the people around them, that's, to your point, I think we immediately go to, how do we fix this, right? And then it causes a frustration when you don't know how to fix it, right? And then it causes issues, and I can only imagine, causes issues in relationships, it causes issues with you personally, right? And I know I've experienced this, where it's, it's like, how can you fix this? I can't believe you feel, insecurities about yourself because you weren't able to fix it. And to your point, understanding more about whichever disease, at times you'll probably realize you can't fix it.
Exactly.
It has to be treated. And there are ways to treat it. And then there are ways for you to help in that treatment, right? But those are other things that we don't talk about as a society. And until it's too late. And that's the whole point of all this, is that it can't be too late. We can't continue to have these conversations after the fact and when it's too late. We have to start getting involved, in the people's lives early on, be compassionate, be caring, and figure this out, because these aren't taboo issues. I guarantee you, you know, you go talk to 10 friends, either 10 out of 10 or 9 out of 10, there's someone they know and their family very close to them is suffering from something.
Without a doubt.
Because I know if I think about the people around me, there's absolutely no doubt that if when I talk to the people that I'm very close to, it's probably 10 out of 10 would say, yes, somebody in our family or very close to us suffers from something. Yeah. And we have to deal with X, Y, and Z. So this is such a common thing in the United States. It's just an absolute sin that it's so taboo and so in the background. But again, look, we started the call, right? We know why, from a corporate standpoint, like these things, you know, aren't discussed. And what I really want employees to understand is that there are lines, there are limits that we have to follow. You know, I think you said some great things early on. You know, somebody comes and talks to you, you can't prescribe, you can't, you know, you can't act like you're helping. You know, you can be a respectful ear, but there are limits. You can point to help. And that's one of the things I think as a corporation, we need to do more of, is giving resources to help people, right? So we can point to resources to help those individuals, right? But there are clear distinctions. And look, the other thing that people have to understand is, if it happens where somebody is let go and we get sued, you're going to have to understand that the corporation probably will then begin to clamp back down, right, before it frees back up, because that's a natural reaction, right, to these things. And that's why this process has been slow in my mind, and probably why it's going to continue to evolve slowly. But to your point, I do think it's getting better. I think it needs to get even more, you know, it needs to improve even more. But, you know, I need employees to be aware that that's the kind of the ebb and flow of what ends up happening. Something does occur and then people shut down, and then you kind of, you know, you react to something and you go backwards. And we just need to understand that that's happening, and that's the environment we're in, and keep pushing to move forward.
And I think the important thing, and we've both touched on this, you know, your job, your role is not to try to pull out of individuals something that they're carrying around with them. It's to be there if they want to talk with you, to just be compassionate and hear what they have to say. As I mentioned earlier on, you're not there as a therapist. You don't act as a therapist. And you don't want to draw out something that they don't want to share. As I mentioned, my son, I mean, I'm telling you, under no circumstances would he share what he's dealing with really anyone. There are individuals that are dealing with things that they're not going to share with you, but they want to know it's okay. And they may just say, I'm dealing with something. And that's okay if they just call it something. They just need to know that it's okay, that there are other people dealing with that, that there are resources, as Lee mentioned, if they're so inclined and they want to go to those resources, then there are resources in place for them to go to. But really, your role is just to allow them to talk if they want to talk. You don't need to draw it out. And for them to know, most importantly, they're not going to be discriminated against because they disclose something about a mental or physical limitation.
Yeah, and I think to your point, maybe the best reaction is if somebody does hint to something, you know, you end up saying, hey, Lee, something's bugging me. My reaction should be, look, if you want to talk, you know, I'm an ear. I care, and I'm here to listen, right?
Yep.
And that's it.
Absolutely. Right?
And then hopefully as a corporation, we have, you know, resources that are available to people that that need them. And that's the goal.
As always, thanks for listening to the Chats That Matter podcast. This episode was hosted by Annette DiTommaso, with editing and production by Matt Mulcahy. Special thanks to our guests, Lee Fox and Andy Kaiser. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, please send us an email at ctmpodcast@sinbill.com.